Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A Catholic priest is paying the price for expressing views contrary to church doctrine. We'll hear from Father Tony Flannery in just a couple of moments, but first, the election. It's finally over. No more ads, no more personal attacks, no more jobs for some politicians. Overall, a big night for the Republican Party here and elsewhere. Joining me in studio to look at winners and losers, St. Louis Public Radio political reporters Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum. With us by phone is our State House reporter Marshall Griffin. And also by phone, we're happy to welcome Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky. Thank you all so much for being with me. I know you all had a very late night.
But yes, we did.
Early morning.
Early morning is more like it. Let me begin this way, and I'll start, ladies, first with you, Joe, in studio. What is your basic takeaway about what happened last night?
Well, it was a Republican bloodbath nationally and regionally, but it also shows that St. Louis County is definitely Democratic turf because the only two Democratic candidates, big names, who remained standing after the evening were Steve Stenger and Jill Shoup.
All righty. And Amanda Vinicky, from your perspective there in Chicago?
I have to say that it proves in a lot of ways, crazily, given that we will now have a Republican governor taking over in Illinois, how very blue of a state Illinois is, because so many of the other races where you had expected expected even Republicans like Judy Bartopinka to soar, she came in really darn close. So it shows, I think, how very Democratic Illinois is, except for, of course, when you have a candidate with a whole lot of money and a really unpopular governor, as we did with Pat Quinn.
All righty. We'll get back to some of that in just a moment. Marshall Griffin, your takeaway from what happened last night.
Well, it was definitely a very good night for the Republicans statewide as well, as the supermajority, which was just barely a supermajority, is now a very strong supermajority in the House. And there was even one pickup in the Senate as well. So the House leaders, the incoming Speaker John Deal, although he's hasn't been officially elected yet, but we will be sometime this week, possibly today. He won't have to go to Democrats and make a promise here or there to get them to switch votes on things like Tim Jones had to do. They have a very comfortable supermajority in the House.
Go ahead.
And that said, there was a couple of minor victories as well, for at least one minor victory for the Democrats. In Cole County, there was a circuit judge race that the GOP committee in Washington had spent a lot of money to try to flip Republican. That's Patricia Joyce. The reason they targeted Cole County is because a lot of the lawsuits regarding ballot initiatives, constitutional amendments, new laws that have been passed. Whenever they get sued, they usually get sued here in Jefferson City. So there was an effort to make sure that all the circuit judges were Republican, and the one Democrat who was a judge was able to withstand attack ads and a challenge from a Republican and hold on to her seat.
So. All righty. Well, let me turn now to Jason. Jason Rosenbaum, your takeaway.
I think it was incredibly damaging for the Democrats in Missouri. They lost enormous amounts of ground in traditionally Democratic strongholds in Jefferson County, Southeast Missouri, and they're now completely wiped out in Northeast Missouri. There was some discussion that I had via email with a Democratic consultant about whether 2010 or this cycle was worse. I think you can make a solid argument that this was a worse cycle because they did even worse this cycle than they did in 2010 in those aforementioned places in the legislature. And I'm not sure there's a really viable path back for them.
Well, the reason it's worse is because in 2010, they lost the Senate and a sitting state auditor. But the difference this time is that they actually tried. And you had Senator Claire McCaskill and Chris Coster, who combined put in close to $1 million. They spent all this money, revamped the state operations, really backed these candidates, went to their fundraisers, and what happened?
Nothing. Except for Jill Shoup and St. Louis County, for the most part, state reps who are in competitive races. You have to give it up the fact that that was a success story. But I think it's a really minor success story. That's a place where Democrats should win anyways. They should not be losing 6 out of 7 House seats in Jefferson County or the state Senate seat there. That's just an outright disaster.
But a lot of outside money was poured into the Shoup race, just like in this judgeship. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats still won. So that may be something that at least will give some Republican groups pause as they decide where to spend their money.
But Stanger is hanging on by the hair of his chinny chin chin.
Yes.
So what is that telling us?
Okay, well, I think it tells us a couple things. As I said, first, I think the fact that he managed to eke out a victory on a night when it was a bloodbath for Republicans everywhere else shows that how blue St. Louis County is. But it also puts him in a difficult position. The guy won by over 30 points just a couple months ago.
Right.
And because of Ferguson, the unrest in Ferguson, split in Democratic ranks, just a lot of things, he's going to have to spend a lot of time healing bridges or at least getting people to listen to him and work together in order to have a strong beginning of his tenure anyway.
Rick Stream falls within the threshold of a recount of 1%.
Is that going to happen? I think the margin is too big for him to overcome.
1,790 votes?
Yeah, I haven't seen a recount ever in Missouri politics in my 8-plus years where it went up or down by that much. It usually goes up by a very small amount, especially in a county race. But you know, I think Rick Stream can find solace that he probably did better than any Republican candidate for this office in a generation. I think that it sets him up well if he wants to run for the state Senate in 2016. So I don't think he has anything to be ashamed of, given that he was probably the heavy underdog before the Michael Brown shooting. But, I mean, the fact is a win is a win, and Stanger has prevailed. And he's going to be able to do some pretty extensive things with this office.
Now, a couple interesting side notes. First, I think Stream did offer a pattern, so to speak, for how Republicans can successfully maneuver in St. Louis County. The gentleman has a very conservative record in Jefferson City, but he also has a very pleasant persona. He's one of the more pleasant politicians that I deal with. And he's very honest and open. And I think that played well. In the county, he came really close. He was really a gentleman in his concession speech. It's unclear if he's going to seek a recount, but from what I'm hearing, he probably won't. I think he said instead he'd called Stanger and offered to help him as far as healing. So it kind of sets the stage for kind of how to be a class act and actually move forward. And then there are two consultants I want to name. Last night, when Stream was still ahead by a couple thousand votes, Richard Callow, who's the Democratic consultant here in the city, was telling Democrats that they could go to bed, they could wake up, and it would be Stanger as county exec. And the other consultant, who I think has kind of a mixed feelings about this, is Republican consultant Jeff Rowe, who bought this polling firm that had been circulating these polls. The poll that they put out 2 days before that we were all ridiculing turned out to be right on the money. Mm. So although I'm sure he's sorry that Stream lost, Roe's going to be probably getting a lot of business for his polling firm.
Yeah.
let me turn to Amanda Vinicky. Amanda, were the polls pretty accurate up in your neck of the woods?
You know, it's all over the board. It's funny because I know I have seen some of the firms just coming out and apologizing for being all over the place. There have been some that put, for example, the governor's race pretty much all across the board. They said it was going to be neck and neck. Nobody predicted a result quite like this one. As I alluded to earlier, you had some races where there were supposed to be individuals who were way out in front, and instead the race was a whole lot closer. We still, for example, don't have a winner in the state treasurer's race. There are several Illinois House races that have come down to about a dozen, maybe two dozen votes. And we obviously, despite having a governor who, a candidate who has declared victory, we have a sitting governor who has refused to concede at this point in time. And so, no, you know, even Nate Silver, who everybody, you know, seemed to have the halo effect around last time, had predicted that Quinn had a 59% chance of winning this thing. Didn't see that come true. For every poll that gets kind of close, there's another poll that was nowhere near.
Yeah.
Mr. Round is going to have some difficulty, I think, with his legislature, your legislature, is he not?
That's really another major takeaway of this election is, I said, this is what showed me how really Democratic Illinois is, because you saw these Republican gains in Missouri, everywhere in the nation, and yet House Speaker Michael Madigan was able to hold on to his supermajority. So, again, you have both chambers of Illinois' General Assembly with veto-proof supermajorities, not just majorities, but supermajorities. And there had been an expectation that in the House, Democrats could lose a handful, maybe a dozen, but really probably more like a handful of seats to Republicans after Rauner had pumped in all of this money to get out the vote into the state party, and instead, zero change whatsoever. So Madigan holds onto that control. It's clear he not only knows how to win elections, he knows how to use it. So that's going to be very difficult, I think, for Rauner as he begins to take over. He said for a long time that he hates, you know, these career politicians and they're the ones at fault, but he struck a really conciliatory tone in his victory speech. I'm guessing that'll go away quickly once he starts to have to actually work, quote unquote, with these guys, because they want to stay in control, and particularly they want to win back that governor's office 4 years from now. Everything from day one is going to be geared toward that.
We want to talk about the effect of the vote on the Missouri legislature as well, and do that in a moment. I have to take a break. You've just heard from Amanda Vinicky, State House reporter for Illinois Public Radio. With me in studio, Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum, a political reporter for St. Louis Public Radio, and Jefferson City, Marshall Griffin, our State House reporter. Back in just a moment to continue this conversation following yesterday's election. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our post-election coverage in just a moment. But first, these news headlines on this post-election day. The St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom is taking a hard look at some of last night's results, as we are, including answers to the six questions Jason Rosenbaum posed about what to expect from the election. Joe Manis is reporting on the impact of Steve Stenger's win in the county executive race, especially in light of the rift in the Democratic Party caused by the group of African-American voters who voted against Stenger and for his Republican opponent Rick Stream. In other news, Governor Jay Nixon has appointed two people to lead the charge to prevent the St. Louis Rams from leaving St. Louis. Former Anheuser-Busch President Dave Peacock and attorney Bob Blitz will have 60 days to come up with a plan to help Nixon negotiate a way to keep the Rams in St. Louis. And the Missouri Foundation for Health has released a study showing the challenges older residents face as they age. Among the findings, access to care is difficult for the entire aging population due to a shortage of geriatric doctors, but people of color, rural residents, and members of the LGBT community are particularly adversely affected by lack of services. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation following the election. Marshall, let me turn to you with regard to the big win for Republicans in the state legislature. This is going to make the last two years of Governor Nixon's term problematical for him, isn't it?
Well, probably not as I would say it's been somewhat problematical, at least in terms of trying to get Medicaid expansion passed. I do think it'll be a little bit tougher for him, but I don't think we'll see a whole lot of change, because things have already been pretty hard for the governor, between the governor and the House, the Republican-led House and Senate. The relations weren't that great with Tim Jones as Speaker, and I don't expect they'll be any better with John Deal as Speaker. And let me add one footnote. The House Republican Caucus is meeting this afternoon, and they are expected to officially elect Deal as the next House Speaker. We'll know for sure at 3 o'clock. They have a press availability then. The governor also is going to be meeting with the media at 2 o'clock regarding last night's and yesterday's election results, and we'll hear what he has to say about Amendment 10 passing.
Well, that's a key issue, and that's one of the problems.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure he's not very happy with that. That particular amendment will limit his ability to withhold money from the state budget specifically. It'll allow House and Senate members to override withholds. And, of course, that brings up the question, well, can the governor just withhold the money again? And that's one question I'll be asking, and we'll see what kind of answer we get.
Yeah, because the state constitution requires that the state end each fiscal year with a balanced budget, and it gives the governor the responsibility of making sure that it's balanced. Now, frankly, there are some people, including myself, who was surprised that the governor didn't at least do some public events explaining this, because Amendment 10 didn't pass by a huge amount. And if you look at the fact that two of the other three amendments on the ballot lost, mainly because there were at least some campaigns explaining the fallout of those amendments, I'm surprised that he didn't say or do something to kind of explain to the public the ramifications of what's going to happen if Amendment 10 passes. And it's not just for Nixon. It's going to be for any future governor. Right. And it's going to make it so that if the General Assembly decides, well, they don't want to cut this, they don't want to cut that, they don't want to cut the other, so then they override all these withholds. Well, then he's got to withhold money from somewhere else. I mean, so where's he going to go? It's not like Congress where they can balk at it and then it just becomes a deficit. In Missouri, it can't happen.
I wonder how much of the unrest in Ferguson contributed to his not focusing time on perhaps going out and campaigning against this particular constitutional amendment. He was in campaign mode against a lot of the vetoed bills from earlier this year before the shooting of Michael Brown. And I wonder if that played any type of impact in his schedule as far as going around and campaigning, possibly campaigning against Amendment 10.
Well, he didn't campaign for against anybody the last month.
Yeah. So. I'll just make this quick point on Medicaid expansion. I don't think straight-up Medicaid expansion ever had a chance of passing the Republican legislature. Quote-unquote Medicaid reform, which has expansion and a lot of changes to Medicaid, had a glimmer of hope. But as I've said many times, one of the big obstacles was Senator Rob Schaaf of St. Joseph, who wanted to pair that issue with, you know, licensing hospitals and price transparency. He won re-election big. He has 4 years in the Senate, and I don't think he's going to let any Medicaid reform without those issues go through.
But Deal is closer to the business community than Tim Jones was, so you wonder sort of what, because the business community has been pushing for Medicaid expansion.
Let me just point out the other two constitutional amendments that failed, or the two that failed, were teacher evaluation and early voting.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by either one of those. So.
Yeah, lots to talk about, and time is limited. Amanda, I want to come back to you, because one of the big stories here, and it's a little bit south of where you are right now, concerns the 12th Congressional District and incumbent Congressman Enyart's loss. How are you reading that, or were you paying much attention to this particular race from where you are?
Well, you know, there's so many interesting races in Illinois and Missouri and everywhere. I didn't have my pulse as much on that one, but how could you not have paid attention to it given the screams that Congressman-elect Mike Boss made in the Illinois General Assembly that made airwaves everywhere? I think he made cable TV shows throughout the nation with his Let My People Go Moses impersonation. So despite some of those negative ads, Boss obviously was able to prevail. That's a district where I'm not all that surprised by Boss success there, just given his popularity also in southern Illinois. And that said, you know, you always have to look at a congressional vote. I like to say it's not just for the individual, but for the party. And this was in what party you're sending to D.C., who you're giving power to. And it played very much, of course, into that national momentum.
Let me assure you that we're familiar with the outburst that you mentioned.
Yeah, I just got to.
How can you not be? Yeah. Huh? It was classic. And frankly, as a longtime observer of Illinois state politics, I don't blame him for that one. Democrats who, as I said earlier, very much control the General Assembly, do not let Republicans get a word in when it really matters oftentimes, and that has to really be frustrating. So that was a lot of pent-up energy that was probably deserved.
I was just going to say, the DCCC ran ads showcasing that speech in kind of ad nauseum, and I just wondered whether it was going to completely backfire on them, because in the counties that the 12th district encompasses, I can't imagine that the Illinois government is terribly popular, especially since Governor Quinn shut down a lot of facilities there. And the fact that Boss was basically railing against this Democratic power structure that's unpopular in the district may have given voters like, yeah, I'm mad at Illinois government too. I'm going to vote for this guy. So I think
exactly.
That was a huge blunder.
Yeah. Cheers to him.
Yeah. Now, but I've had some Democratic consultants even last night while this stuff was being tallied who contend that that district leans Democratic, and they believe if they get the right candidate in 2016 when it's a presidential election year and they expect they'll have a better turnout, that they might be able to snag it back.
Well, and State Representative Jerry Costello II comes to mind as a possible person who could do that, who is the son son of former Congressman Jerry Costello.
Well, let me come back to St. Louis County, because I think we have to clarify, Joe, I'll put this to you.
Okay.
Is there any clear indication as to whether or not the African-American vote that was poised to vote against Steve Stenger or the McCulloch association with Stenger had any bearing on yesterday's vote?
Well, I deigned to look at the township by townships, but St. Louis County Election Board tends to be pretty slow getting that together. And
So we can only just guess.
I'm not sure. I think there may have been pockets where it did have an impact. But the last block of votes that were counted were the ones that put Stenger over the top. So I think it was kind of mixed up there. Stream may have done a little better up in North County than Republicans traditionally do. One thing this does do, though, if you remember, Representative U.S. Rep. Lacey Clay went with Stenger.
Yeah.
And so he went against some other African-American leaders in his own party. This was important to him for Stenger to win, because if Stenger hadn't, it would look like Clay didn't have as much clout. Now that Stenger won, Clay will arguably have additional clout within North County, but also in Clayton.
Yeah.
I mean, because Stenger knows that Clay played
a
crucial role.
Just as kind of another aside, one of the variables that Stenger had in his favor was he probably did a lot better in South County, which is a relatively mixed area politically, and that probably – coupled with the fact that he did well in parts of North County and Central County, was probably enough to put him over the top. If you recall, Bill Corrigan won South County by a huge margin.
In 2010,
but lost North County by a huge margin. So I think that might be one of the things that people weren't talking about that may have been an advantage for Stenger.
And I'm curious to look at West County, because Republicans were telling me that the West County turnout was huge and it was on a presidential level. But until we see those township by townships,
we don't know.
Let me change direction here a little bit and go back to Marshall. Marshall, how did Rex Singfield come out of this?
Good question. I can tell you that that Tom Schweik did not think that Rex Singfield had a good night. I'll also tell you this, switching from Rex Singfield, I do want to bring up one particular point. Senate, in addition to the House caucusing, the Senate will actually hold a caucus tomorrow and decide whether or not Tom Dempsey will remain president pro tem. There's a possibility he could face a challenge from Majority Floor Leader Ron Richard. So we'll have to keep our eyes on that tomorrow.
Yeah, but I will just say Rex Singfield, a PAC that was linked to him, funneled basically $60,000 to Democratic State Representative Jeff Rorta of Jefferson County, and he lost pretty badly to Paul Whelan.
Now,
so that's one loss for him, even though that was kind of an indirect way.
And the
way.
Singfield Group, allied group where he was bankrolling at Grow Missouri, poured a lot of last-minute money into the Shoop Ashcroft wave on behalf of Ashcroft. That lost. He put $1.2 million in the Pro Amendment 10 campaign.
Which won.
That won. So he's got a win there. But I would say he had a mixed bag.
I would say a mixed bag.
And for those who don't know, Rex Singfield, of course, is the billionaire who spends a lot of money trying to influence political races and political
last 7 years, Rex Singfield has become a major player.
Speaking of that,
I had a story of this whole election, too, the money that has been infused into all of these races and, you know, the effects of the Supreme Court rulings and just the big power players. You've got these billionaires and multimillionaires who are putting a whole lot of attention toward politics and win some, lose some, but it's definitely, I think, a takeaway and something to pay attention to. We're going to hear more about campaign finance, I'm guessing, going forward.
While we still have you, Amanda, you had other things on the ballot. You had some propositions on the ballot. Very, very quickly, how did they go?
There were 5 statewide questions, 2 of which were constitutional amendments. 3 others were non-binding referenda that could have a role in pushing the General Assembly over the edge and providing popular support and their being able to say, oh, hey, yeah, we can do it. But really what it was all about was supposed to be an attempt to drive up Democratic voter turnout, the minimum wage, something that polls popular, get everybody to the polls. Everything succeeded. So Illinois will be getting 2 changes to its constitution, a Voters Bill of Rights and a Crime Victim Bill of Rights, and all 3 of those non-binding referenda also passing pretty healthily. it does not appear, however, as if they did the trick. Clearly, Governor Pat Quinn, again, failing to hold on to his seat. And so despite Democratic attempts to drive up turnout there, it doesn't seem as if it did so.
One other thing that I would like to get to, and that is what happened in the city of St. Louis.
Ah, yes.
With the Recorder of Deeds. We have to do it very quickly, but Sharon Carpenter returns.
Quigley mania.
Yeah, Sharon Carpenter, I've known her for decades, and she has longtime Recorder of Deeds, had to step down in July over nepotism accusations, but she was allowed to run for office again. She was already on the August primary ballot, so she won the August primary. The replacement that the mayor put in her post, Jennifer Florida, who was a former Democratic alderwoman, filed as an independent. So the plan was, because the mayor was backing Florida, was that Florida would defeat Carpenter in the general. But it showed that Carpenter, who's a former chairman of the city Democratic Party and has a lot of ties, she beat her
27 out of 28 wards.
Right.
We have someone else on the line holding for another subject. But before we say goodbye to you folks, very, very quickly, I'll go around the table. 15 seconds.
Okay.
Bottom line.
Okay. Bottom line is we're going to see St. Louis County is increasingly an island in a Republican ocean in Missouri.
Jason?
The Democratic hole in the Missouri legislature is so incredibly deep, I don't know if they will ever get out of it in my lifetime.
That takes us to Marshall Griffin. Marshall, quickly.
The governor will have an even harder time working with the legislature and will probably not have a nice thing to say about Rex Sinkfield in about an hour and a half from now.
All righty. And finally, Amanda Vinicky.
It is going to be one of the more interesting times in Illinois politics going forward once we actually get that concession likely from Governor Pat Quinn, but especially thereafter with a Republican governor who wants right to work and who had gotten an anti-union campaign in this very Democratic and union state. It's going to be very fun.
Okay, I want to thank you all. Time has gone by so quickly. Thank you to Joe Manis, Jason Rosenbaum, Marshall Griffin, and Amanda Vinicky. Coming up next, a Catholic priest whose dissenting views about church doctrine put him in conflict with the Vatican. Father Tony Flannery is next on St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.